Hello, and welcome to the African American News Hour. My name is Rosemary Onkwe, and I'm bringing you readings from the following publication: Blavity, News One, Associated Press, The Voice, Ebony, The Griot, The Root, and an online publication called Black Girl Nerds. Today I will begin our recording from an article from The Voice titled A Legacy Rooted in Vision and Family by The Voice News Service, July 13, 2025. The Community Voice was founded by Billy Q. McCray, M-C-C-R-A-Y, and Yvette McCray, W-Y-V-E-T-T-E, a couple whose passion for quality information and strong community leadership planted the seeds for what would become a lasting institution. Billy McCray was no stranger to leadership. He was one of the longest-serving African Americans in the Kansas legislature, having served in both the Kansas House of Representatives and the Senate. He later continued his service on Sedgwick County Commission. The idea for the paper had lived in McCray's heart long before its first print run. He envisioned something lasting, something that would fill the void left by earlier black newspapers in Wichita, such as The News Hawk, 1966-1984, published by Leonard Garrett, and The Wichita Times, The Kansas Journal, The Kansas Black Journal, 1970-1985, published by Jack Hudson. With their closures, Wichita was left without a black voice in print. While others attempted to fill the gap, none stuck. Billy McCray wanted the Community Voice to be different, and he made that clear in the very first issue. Our reporters will seek out and examine stories that parallel state and national issues of the day. They will not attempt to compete with the three leading television stations of the city, nor will we try to be current as the leading daily newspaper of the region on violence and tragedies. Yet our news will be timely and informative. They may often be stories that you will not read in USA Today or see on a local talk show via electronic media. Yet it is the publisher's intent to convey an honest and meaningful report that the reading audience and advertising constituents would have recognized as a story that needed to be told, and at the same time offer an insight that other media did not see as a priority. That quote serves as a guiding light to this day. The McCray family launched the first issue as a true family affair. Billy and Yvette served as co-publishers. Their daughter, Frankie Lien, F-R-A-N-K-I-E-L-I-E-E-N, Connolly, was senior editor. The first issue of the monthly publication featured an article by the McCrays' other daughter, Melody McCray Miller. Newly elected to the Sedgwick County Commission, she wrote about her first 60 days in office. Melody and her husband also owned Miller's Barbecue, which was featured in that same issue as an article titled, That's Real Barbecue. The first issue also included contributions from community members like Dr. Val Brown Jr., who shared insights on heart attacks, and journalist Brenda Gray, who wrote on topics including Wichita Metropolitan Family Preservation. Other stories included one on the local black-owned bus line, Thunderbird Express, and advocacy groups Power CDC, whose members were headed to Washington, D.C. for a conference. Covering our future and our past, the issue highlighted rising star Valencia Monk and honored community matriarch Bessie Halbrook. Tragically, Yvette McCray passed away on June 5, 1995, only 2 months after the first issue was published. She was just 62. She and Billy had been married for 44 years. Her death drained Billy and his passion for doing the work he knew producing a quality paper would require. He deeply believed in the importance of publication and began looking for someone to carry on the vision. Kansas State Senator U.L. Rip Gooch, G-O-O-C-H, a friend of the McRae's, stepped in and encouraged his daughter, Bonita Gooch, to consider taking the reins. Bonita had just returned to Wichita after decades away. A graduate of the University of Kansas, William Allen White School of Journalism, she hadn't pursued a journalism career after graduation. Instead, she earned a master's degree in public administration and had been working in city management. She returned home following the untimely death of her brother, wanting to be closer to her parents and to raise her young daughter, Lauren, in a nurturing environment. Although uncertain at first, Bonita agreed to take on the challenge. She purchased the Community Voice on October 1996, releasing her first issue the next month. Under Bonita's leadership, the paper changed in appearance, expanded in coverage, and modernized, but it never strayed from the mission laid out by the McRae's. She remained committed to highlighting the best of the community, building connections, and informing with integrity. Bonita often emphasizes that she is merely a steward of the McRae's family's vision, and that her work has been to protect and grow the foundation they laid. This article was titled, A Legacy Rooted in Vision and Family, written by The Voice News Service, The Voice, July 13, 2025. The next article is titled, Smurfs Director and Cast, on How Rihanna Managed to Become the Heart of New Film, written by Shanique Yates, S-H-A-N-I-Q-U-E-Y-A-T-E-S, Blavity, July 19, 2025. The Smurfs are back, like never before. And they're bringing a few familiar faces and voices along for the ride. The film intended to reinvigorate the Smurfs franchise with a new visual style while staying true to Peyo's, P-E-Y-O, original comics. Director Chris Miller opened up about the creative challenges that came with trying to maintain that balance. There were a couple of goals, Miller told Blavity's Shadow and Act, during our cast interview. For me, I wanted something because I hadn't seen it, and it really spoke to me. The original DNA of those comics, right? I tried to look at the movie. Okay, I want to treat this like the first Smurfs movie that's ever been made. I know generationally there are so many examples, and I respect them all. I love them, particularly that Hanna-Barbera series from the 80s, because that's the one I grew up with. But I wanted this to feel like an original story. Let's add something more to the mythology. Let's make a movie that could stand on its own. According to an official synopsis, when evil wizard Razamel and Gargamel take Papa Smurf, the Smurfs embark on a mission to the real world to save him. With help from some new friends, they must discover what defines their destiny to save the universe. The film stars heavy hitters like John Goodman as Papa Smurf, James Corden as No Name Smurf, Nick Offerman as Ken, Xolo Maridueña, X-O-L-O, M-A-R-I-D-U-E-N-A as Brainy, Octavia Spencer as Asmodeus, and Rihanna as Smurfette. What do the cast and directors have to say about Rihanna as Smurfette? Along with voicing Smurfette, Rihanna served as a producer on Smurfs, which director Chris Miller broke down further, so that fans may get a peek inside the genius of the musician turned business mogul. First of all, as a performer, as an actor, she brought such authenticity to the performance. I mean, it so represents where she's coming from in any situation. She was put in the movie, and that came from like working through the script, getting what's on the script. But then also in those sessions, Rihanna, she could put her own voice into it. In other words, she could work off the page and just invent stuff. And I love that because there's an authenticity to it. And she's funny naturally, and she's vulnerable, like fantastic. So that's Ri as a performer. Miller added, as a producer, she's got great taste. And working with her on just even the Smurfette design, which we spent a long time on. I mean, honestly, it was a course of a year just to really scrutinize Smurfette. Like, what can we do differently with her, augment the design, anything? We explored so much. I can't even tell you. Hundreds and hundreds of drawings, and we ended up coming back doing a full circle. It was both of us. And we were just like, it's the original design. Why would we mess with that? Slightly tweaked, augmented, I think, in a really great way. Actually, the design is kind of spot on. For Nick Offerman, the voice of Ken, it's always been a dream of his to work with Rihanna in any capacity. And now it's come true by way of Smurfs. I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm seeing it tomorrow at the premiere, Offerman said at the time of this interview. So far, it's been a blast to make my contribution. But at the moment, in my imagination, it's the greatest thing I've ever done. And I think it'll be a life peak tomorrow. And hopefully, that'll come true when I meet Rihanna and she enters into my marriage with my wife and I, and we'll live happily ever after. Power of letting your imagination run wild. In this version of the beloved Smurfs franchise, as much as it's a project that is visually ambitious, the film is also emotionally rich, which helped actors like Xolo Maridueña tap into his own childhood memories to voice his character, Brainy Smurf. So much of the imagination and the childlike qualities come in there in the recording booth when you're making a movie like this. The Smurfs, definitely, and the greatest Smurfs team, were so indicative of that. We were all laughing our butts off in the recording booth just thinking about all the funny scenarios that these guys were getting themselves into. The film's larger message on finding yourself. This take on the Smurfs is rooted in passion and purpose through the lens of community, which the cast members admitted is one of the many things that resonated with them the most. I think that says it all. Is finding your purpose and, you know, waiting for it, Goodman, who voices Papa Smurf, said. You don't have to force a purpose onto it. It'll come to you and be patient. It's a great life lesson that even if you sort of achieve your dream job, you have to stay vigilant and stay on top of it, Offerman said. I love the message in the movie that if you're trying to find your purpose, as John Goodman said, don't look in the mirror for it. Look at those around you in the community and see what needs doing and who needs hugging. Smurfs is in theaters now. This article was titled Smurfs Director and Cast on How Rihanna Managed to Become the Heart of New Film. Written by Shanique Yates Blavity, July 19th, 2025. The next article is titled Paris Unveils Mural of Josephine Baker to Honor Her Legacy, written by the Associated Press, The Griot, July 21st, 2025. Paris is reviving the spirit of the U.S. French entertainer and civil rights activist, Josephine Baker, with a new mural. 50 years after her death, Baker now gazes over a diverse neighborhood of Northeast Paris, thanks to urban artist FKDL and a street art festival aimed at promoting community spirit. Born in St. Louis, Baker became a megastar in the 1930s, especially in France, where she moved in 1925 as she sought to flee racism and segregation in the United States. In addition to her stage fame, Baker also spied on the Nazis for the French Resistance and marched alongside Martin Luther King Jr. in Washington. She died in Paris in 1975. I feel moved, and I feel happy, because this is a part of my memory of my mother. Her son, Brian Baker, told the Associated Press at the unveiling of the mural Saturday. He was one of 12 children Josephine Baker adopted from around the world that she called her Rainbow Tribe and what her son called a Little United Nations. The mural of Baker, meant to symbolize freedom and resistance, is among several painted in recent days in the neighborhood and organized by the Association of Paris Couleurs Urc. The artist, FKDL, said he focuses on bringing women back into the urban landscape. Josephine Baker has always been, for me, a somewhat iconic figure of that era, both wild and free-spirited, but also deeply connected to music, musicals, and dance, he said. She was an extraordinary character, an incredible woman. Baker was the first black woman inducted into France's Pantheon, joining such luminaries as philosopher Voltaire, scientist Marie Curie, and writer Victor Hugo. My mother wouldn't have liked the words like iconic star or celebrity. She would have said, "No, no, let's keep it simple," her son said. This article was titled, "Paris Unveils Mural of Josephine Baker to Honor Her Legacy," written by the Associated Press, The Griot, July 21st, 2025. Next, an article from The Root titled, "After 3 Open Heart Surgeries, This Black Father Discovered an Unusual Cure," written by Angela Johnson, July 7th, 2025. These days, Donnie Seals, Sr., S-E-A-L-S, has a lot to celebrate. For years, the 72-year-old has struggled with heart health issues due to unhealthy diet and lifestyle habits. By 50, he had gone through 3 open-heart surgeries, including a quintuple bypass, according to Cycling Weekly. But Seals, who lost his sister and his father to heart complications, knew his survival depended on him making some major changes, which ultimately led him to find a passion that is saving his life, cycling. But Donnie isn't hitting the road alone. His son Eric is often by his side. Their rides have not only improved their health, but they have strengthened their bond, as the two have had some of their best conversations while they bike. A 4-day, 350-mile trip the two took from St. Louis to Chicago is the subject of a PBS documentary, Bike Vessel, which Eric directed and edited. In the film, Donnie Sr. recalls how riding helped him get into shape over time. Although he couldn't even ride his first bike home from the store, he kept riding around his neighborhood and continued to build up his stamina. Now he can't imagine a day that doesn't include him being on his bike. "I remember my quarter-mile rides where my legs were burning, and now when I ride, my body isn't ready to ride until I hit mile 10, he said in the film. "If I don't ride for 2 days, I literally go through withdrawals." In a period of 2 years, Donnie Sr.'s healthy new habit has allowed doctors to wean him off a prescription drug regimen of nearly 20 pills per day. "My cardiologist said my biking is my medication, so as long as I'm biking, I should never have to go back to this stuff," he said in the film. Eric hopes Bike Vessel will shine a light on health issues in the black community. "It is important to us that we not only showcase what an unhealthy lifestyle can lead to, but also provide a pathway forward and show what types of adjustments can be made to live a lasting, healthy life," the film's website reads. This article was titled, "After 3 Open Heart Surgeries, This Black Father Discovered an Unusual Cure," written by Angela Johnson, The Root, July 7th, 2025. Next, an article from Ebony featuring Angela Bassett on the cover, written by Corey Murray, and photos by Ijatu Jatu, E-J-A-T-U. The cover of Ebony, May 2025. In the opening scene of Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning, Master Spy Ethan Hunt listens to a familiar message one last time. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is enunciated by a voice that's sultry, evocative, and undeniably Angela Bassett. On another movie, this would be another set of memorized lines. However, Bassett knows the weight they carry in the franchise's canon. She wanted some extra assurance. She would articulate her words just right. I was so nervous, she laughs at the memory. I literally had to say, Lord, help me get through this, and then get to work. Bassett's prayers were answered. Not only did she deliver the scene, but she's along for the ride as Mission Impossible cast heads to its global premiere at the 78th Festival de Cannes. But before the actress steps onto the Palais steps, she's in London mixing a little business with pleasure. There's an energy, you know, in the streets, very much like New York, said Bassett. Soho is a nice walking area. Then I do a little window shopping, look at the quaint shops, mom and pop stores we don't see here in the States, and theater, of course. That's my first love. I enjoy London quite a bit. The Big Smoke will be home for a few days as she begins promoting Mission Impossible, where she's reprising her role as Erica Sloan, CIA's deputy director. For the final film, she has a noticeable job promotion, President of the United States. This year marks Bassett's second time playing POTUS on screen. Last February, she starred opposite Robert De Niro in Netflix's Zero Day, and now reteams with Tom Cruise as his commander-in-chief. When asked what it means to play empowered women's roles, especially when the United States has yet to elect a female president, Bassett says, "The representation is needed. It should not be impossible to be seen. I feel incredibly blessed, not lucky, blessed with the roles that I have been able to portray on scene and stage." The Emmy-winning actress is spreading her blessings by turning them into opportunities for other black and brown creatives in Hollywood. As the star and executive producer of her hit Fox series, 9-1-1, Bassett has a hand in ensuring that the set's diverse behind-the-scene camera. It's a challenging club to break into, but I have to support black female directors and new writers. 9-1-1 is a well-oiled machine. We're producing 18 episodes a year, so there's an opportunity to give them a shot. I love that aspect of the job. Bassett extends this directive to the production company she runs with her husband, Courtney B. Vance, who she says is more in the trenches of the day-to-day running of Bassett/Vance production. I'm 14 hours over here filming 9-1-1. I come in to open the door or close the deal, she says, adding with a laugh, I gotta sleep sometimes. Back in London, resting isn't on Bassett's agenda, because this is one of her favorite cities. Plus, she's still buzzing from her first appearance at the Met Gala, where coincidentally, she was dressed by Burberry, London's storied fashion house. She says of the historic evening celebrating black style, I felt like we understood the assignment. The moment her press obligations are done, she's gathering her walking shoes to explore the town. When traveling anywhere, that's her modus operandi. It depends on the city. Is it a walking city? Is it an artist city? Or is there a music scene? Or is it more historical? Whatever it is, I just dive into and try to get to the nucleus of the city's vibe, she says. And what's her essential traveling accessory? A good pair of sneakers. I want to be comfortable, get around, and have a good time. I want to get in the street, meet people, and have experiences. She remembers her first trip abroad, back when she could finally afford a good coach ticket, right after finishing her master's at Yale's School of Drama. It was the Virgin Islands. It was so beautiful. I told myself, I'm going to go to each and every one, she remembers. I've since been to about 9 different islands in the Caribbean, but that first trip, seeing that beautiful vista, ocean air, expansive blue sky, I felt like home. Long before she would appear in films, that would take her around the world, Bassett grew up in St. Petersburg, Florida. It's there on a small town stage that she found her love of the written word as a form of self-expression. However, as many local and national cultural institutions, including the National Endowment for the Arts and the Kennedy Center, face losing financial support from the federal government, Bassett finds defunding the arts devastating. Art is the illumination of the human experience that we're all going through. It's what makes life beautiful and bearable, poignant and joyous. You'll never get rid of it. It eats in the souls of certain individuals. It's who we are, she says. There's creativity in everything. I hope that we as a country will come together to save the art. We cannot live without it. Bassett knows this firsthand because the arts have fed her soul for over 40 years. I love theater because it's the actor's medium, she says. Television is the writer's medium, but theater, it's you and the lip of the stage and the audience. We're having this experience this night together. It'll be a different experience with different souls the next night and the next night and so on and so forth. There's no place to hide. You bare your soul, and if it works, they'll let you know. But Bassett's eager for a chance to perform in front of a live audience. New York is waiting for me. I can't wait to get to the stage. Before she makes her way back to Broadway, Bassett's last experience was in 2011 opposite Samuel L. Jackson in The Mountaintop. There's the very urgent business of saying farewell to Mission Impossible fans. She spent the greater part of her first day in London getting ready for a series of high-profile interviews, including this cover story with Ebony. As Bassett leans against the penthouse balcony, with Big Ben's clock tower glimmering above her shoulders, she's contemplating two very important questions. Spies are exceptional at keeping secrets, are you? If you tell me this is a secret and I'm instructed not to say anything, then I will hold it. I'm pretty good. Although I'm not a steel trap, I'm pretty good at it. Some secrets I'm just not interested in sharing. Then, would you say you would be a good spy in real life? I don't know. My face may tell the tale. I'll try to give a bland face, but I don't know. I'm very expressive, I've been told. This article was titled, Angela Bassett, the Explorer. From Ebony. Story by Carrie Murray. Photos by Ijatu Shaw for Ebony. Next, going back in time, an article from an online publication titled Black Girl Nerds. The title is Reclaiming the Black Body. Nourishing the home within is a vital resource for self-love. Written by licensed clinical mental health therapist Alicia McCullough, Reclaiming the Black Body, Nourishing the Home Within is more than a self-help book. It's a revelation. There are many factors and nuances to how eating disorders manifest in black communities. Reclaiming the Black Body is a fantastic resource because it dives deep into this rarely investigated subject and so much more. Starting with the author's note, McCullough takes readers on a relatable journey, grounded in history, self-awareness, and social justice, and community care. Straight out of the gate, the author's notes chapter is succinct and moving recap of the losses black communities experienced alongside the racial awareness and uprising during the pandemic. We get this recent history through the lens of the pandemic's impact on McCullough's career as a therapist and her personal life. McCullough found herself bombarded on all sides and decided to step away from a practice that was not in alignment with her ethics and values, realizing if she did not leave her job, her mental and physical health would suffer. So with the added attention of the need for black therapists during the pandemic, she took the brave step of leaving a soul-draining practice and stepping out on her own. The writing in this book is impressive. McCullough's tone is like she is in the room, having a loving and informed conversation with you. Reclaiming the Black Body, Nourishing the Home Within is part history lesson, part inspirational text that educates as it takes the time to work through the nuances of the challenging items discussed. A key element of this self-care resource is that before the author dives into a subject, using social justice lingo, she takes the time in the early chapter, a few key terms and concepts to situate us, to define the terms and concepts she will be using throughout the book. She describes the terms eating disorders versus eating imbalance, colonization, capitalism, trauma, epigenetics, and what it means to be embodied in ways that are informative and engaging for people who use these terms regularly or not. The book is a perfect example of how to engage complex topics from a trauma-informed perspective, with deeply thought-out content warnings at the beginning of the chapter to prepare the reader for what is to come. One that stood out for me was Chapter 5, Fat Phobia and the Black Community. The content warning states, "This chapter will discuss examples of fat phobia and anti-fat sentiments and weight stigma. While I intend to describe these terms and experiences to offer more context, to aim to discuss these things in an honest and responsible way, I understand that this topic may be triggering or activating for those who are fat or in larger bodies, and for those who live with eating imbalances. At the end of each chapter, there are questions for reflection, where readers can pull out their journals and use the writing prompts to dive deeper into the material." McCullough writes in a kind of loving style that welcomes readers with clarity, deep knowing, wisdom, empathy, and compassion. Instead of just being a book that gives unrealistic exercises that are hard to execute and understand, the book recognizes the challenges that Black people face every day as human beings on this planet, folds in how the system impacts the Black community's ability to nourish ourselves while we also coexist with systemic racism, and then celebrates the fact that we are still here, and does so in a relatable way. The wisdom is down to earth and accessible. Eating disorders in the Black community do manifest in ways that we commonly see in other communities, but what Alicia McCullough exposes are the unique and subtle ways we see eating disorders appear in Black communities that are traditionally ignored. For example, how abstinence culture in conservative Christian Black culture defines a young Black woman's worth by her ability to limit her calories and keep her dress size as small as possible, factoring into her worthiness and ability to attract a male. The book also discusses the impact of a hip-hop culture that created a body image for a woman that negatively impacted generations of Black girls attempting to achieve an almost impossible big bust, thick thighs, small waist combination to be considered to be attractive, worthy, and dateable. It also gives a candid look at the rise of toxic veganism in Black communities as a class issue, as well as the illusion that one style of eating is the only style of eating, that all humans need to achieve optimum health and wellness. Many people in Black communities love talking about cooking and eating soul food, but beyond fat shaming, most Black folks have not had time to discuss eating disorders. Early on, when defining the terms she will be using in the book, McCullough talks about how, in order to survive, Black people have had to be disembodied. Our ancestors were placed under such extreme physical trauma that their coping mechanisms were to be disembodied from their pain and suffering that their physical bodies were going through, without the proper nutrition to survive. These coping mechanisms have been passed down through family lines, and in some cases, this kind of disembodiment is perceived to be strength. Only recently have we begun to scratch the surface of how to process this trauma in different ways. After reclaiming the Black body, nourishing the home within, lays out the history, challenges, and complexities, it gives the reader different perspectives and provides the opportunity for readers to start the process of formulating how to create individual solutions and connect to community. I've been practicing yoga asana since 2001 and recently completed my 500-hour yoga guide certification. I've always liked yoga and recognized the African roots of the practice. I always have to translate the teachings to be relevant to my experience as a Black American woman, descendant of enslaved Africans from South Carolina and the West Indies. Black people have continually educated one another beyond systems. Reclaiming the Black body is like the Our Bodies, Ourselves for Black folks, a must-read essential for any Black person who feels a gap in self-care beyond rest, plant-based diets, potions, and lotions. This article was titled, Reclaiming the Black Body, Nourishing the Home Within, is a Vital Resource for Self-Love, written by Jeannie T. Abraham, Black Girl Nerds, April 2025. The next article is titled, It Was Superman's Movie, But Mr. Terrific Stole the Show, written by Joe Jurado, News 1, July 18, 2025. As one of my friends put it, this is what it felt like to be a longtime DC Comics fan this weekend. I walked out of my IMAX screening of Superman last Sunday feeling two things: immense satisfaction that DC finally made a modern Superman movie that actually understands Superman, and that I immediately needed a movie, TV show, animated series, and video game all about Eddie Garthegi's Mr. Terrific. Judging by audience reactions and newly revealed plans for the character, I'm far from alone in that feeling. A report from the Wall Street Journal reveals Superman director and DC Studios co-CEO James Gunn is considering spin-offs for Superman characters Jimmy Olsen and Mr. Terrific. Superman acts as a reboot for DC's long, beleaguered cinematic universe. The film sets up a new status quo where Mr. Terrific, Hawkgirl, and Green Lantern are the inaugural members of the Justice Gang, which is clearly being set up to become the iconic Justice League down the line. This news of a potential Mr. Terrific spin-off makes sense to anyone who's seen the movie and enjoyed it. Mr. Terrific steals almost every scene he's in, with one of the main highlights being in one-shot action sequence with him single-handedly taking down a platoon of Lex Luthor's armored goons, using only his T-spheres and fists. Me and my best friend, both avid DC comic fans, were giggling and nudging each other like we were comic-obsessed teenagers all over again, every time Mr. Terrific lived up to his name. For those who haven't spent their childhood, 20s, and now early 30s, avidly consuming DC comics, like myself, you might not be immediately familiar with Mr. Terrific. He's a master martial artist, engineer, and his genius-level intellect makes him one of, if not the smartest person in the DC universe. Garthegi brings Mr. Terrific to life in a performance striking the perfect balance of confidence and intelligence. He epitomizes Black cool, and as soon as you see him, you just want to be him. Will I be walking around this fall rocking a Mr. Terrific jacket? Probably. Garthegi is no stranger to comic book movies, having starred as Darwin in 2011's X-Men First Class. I remember being 19 years old and so happy seeing a Black man as one of the formative members of the X-Men. Fast forward an hour into the movie, and I was left with a stank face after Darwin was unceremoniously killed. Making his death more egregious was the fact that his whole mutant power was that he couldn't die. In an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, Garthegi explained how he called out the optics of the only Black member of the X-Men dying during production. I called my agent to say, hey, listen, I have a problem with the fact that this character is the only Black character in the film, aside from Zoe Kravitz's character. I am also the only mutant that meets an untimely demise halfway through the film, Kategi told THR. It was 2009 at the time, and I was like, killing the black guy first, so it is so played out. I can't do this. Kategi says the film producers reassured him that his character wasn't permanently dying. This is comic books, after all. No one ever really dies. And that he would return for future sequels. When the series got to 2016 X-Men Apocalypse, and Kategi never got the call to suit up, that's when he knew for certain his time among the mutants was over. Kategi's fate in X-Men First Class had me worried that Mr. Terrific would be treated the same way. While I've long loved the character from his appearances in shows like Justice League Unlimited, Arrow, and his fantastic characterization in 2021's Strange Adventures comic, he is by no means an A-list hero. Hollywood can't even get a Blade movie off the ground, so I had no reason to think that there were plans for Mr. Terrific beyond this movie. I was incredibly relieved to see Mr. Terrific not only make it to the end, but be essential in stopping Lex Luthor's plot. When he showed up in the film's climax, mushed a white man in the face, and declared, "I'm goddamn Mr. Terrific," I was fighting the impulse to stand up, clap, and salute my superpowered black king. While Kategi's hopes of being a reoccurring mutant were dashed, he told THR he sees Mr. Terrific as a pendulum swing in the opposite direction. With X-Men First Class, the message that I received as an actor and as a man of color in this world is you can be the most powerful mutant in the world, and they'll never let you reach your full potential, Kategi told THR. Whereas, with Mr. Terrific in Superman, the message that I'm receiving is that you can be one of the most intelligent characters in the universe, and you can make a difference. You can help save the world. It's a different level of conversation. The potential impact of Mr. Terrific is clearly not lost on Kategi. I'm so excited to inspire a whole generation of black kids with this new superhero, he said in an interview with the DC Studios Showcase podcast. Since Mr. Terrific made his silver screen debut last weekend, the internet has been abuzz about his scene-stealing turn. Across all social media, there have been memes, fan edits, and explainers about why Mr. Terrific is so cool, and why he's resonated so much with black men in particular. It's Superman's movie, but fans cannot get enough of Mr. Terrific. It's honestly quite heartwarming seeing Kategi finally get the showcase he deserves in a genre that historically did him dirty. With plans in the works for a spinoff and fans clearly loving the character, the future for Mr. Terrific is looking, well, terrific. This article is titled, "It Was Superman's Movie, But Mr. Terrific Stole the Show," written by Joe Jurado, News 1, July 18th, 2025. The next article is titled, "Here's Everything We Know from the Avatar Fire and Ash Trailer," written by Monique Jones, Blavity, July 29th, 2025. Avatar Fire and Ash shows a new fiery side to the world of Pandora. The trailer takes viewers to Pandora one more time, but this time a new fire-controlling tribe is revealed, and they don't have the best interests of other Na'vi, N-A-apostrophe-V-I, including human-turned-Na'vi Sully, Jake Worthington, and his wife and Na'vi warrior, Neytiri. N-E-Y-T-I-R-I, Zoe Saldana, at heart. Along with Worthington and Saldana, the film also stars Sigourney Weaver, Stephen Lang, Una Chaplin, O-O-N-A-C-H-A-P-L-I-N, Cliff Curtis, Britain Dalton, Britain, Trinity Bliss, Jack Champion, Bailey Bass, and Kate Winslet. Saldana told Blavity in 2022 during the press tour for Avatar: The Way of Water that connecting with her character's journey into motherhood allowed her to bring her own experiences of motherhood to the screen. "I'm a mother now, and getting to experience all the fears that my character was going through, because she's a mother as well, and relating to some of those was new for me, but welcoming," she said. She also talked about, despite the technological advancements embedded within the making of the franchise, the Avatar story is essentially a boy-meets-girl romance. "We can talk about the technology and how much it costs to make and impact that first film, but the reason why it was so special was because it was a love story between a boy and a girl finding each other and going against their own currents of life and coming out together as a team and fighting for what's right," she said. "This is a continuation of that. At the core of all of this is family." Avatar: Fire and Ash comes to theaters on December 19th. This article was titled, "Here's Everything We Know from the Avatar: Fire and Ash Trailer," written by Monique Jones from Blavity, July 29th, 2025. Next, another article from Blavity titled, "Eyes of Wakanda Trailer, Marvel Animation Series on Disney, and Series Explores Wakandan History," written by Trey Mangum, M-A-N-G-U-M, July 28th, 2025. Marvel Animation has dropped the first trailer for its upcoming Disney Plus series, Eyes of Wakanda, the animated series to expand the lore of Wakanda. The series was unveiled back in June at the Annecy International Animation Festival. Disney Plus has also announced an earlier than expected premiere for the series. The action-adventure series was produced by Marvel Animation in partnership with Proximity Media's Zinzi Coogler, Sev Ohanian, Sevohanian, and Kalia King, and follows the adventures by brave Wakandan warriors throughout history. Per the official description, in this globe-trotting adventure, the heroes must carry out dangerous missions to revive Vibranium's artifacts and the enemies of Wakanda. They are the Hatut Zarazi, Hatut Zarazi, and this is their story. The voice cast includes Winnie Harlow, Cress Williams, Patricia Belcher, Larry Herron, H-E-R-R-O-N, Adam Gold, Lynn Whitfield, Jacques Coleman, J-A-C-Q-U-E-S, C-O-L-I-M-O-N, Yona Xiao, J-O-N-A, X-I-A-O, Isaac Robinson Smith, Gary Anthony Williams, Zeke Alton, Steve Toussaint, and Anika Noni Rose. The series is helmed by director and executive producer Todd Harris, who has worked in the MCU and has been a frequent Ryan Coogler collaborator, working as a storyboard artist on Black Panther and Black Panther Wakanda Forever. He was then an illustrator on Sinners. Eyes of Wakanda is executive produced by Ryan Coogler, Brian Winderbaum, Kevin Feige, F-E-I-G-E, Luis de Esposito, L-O-U-I-S, D apostrophe E S P O S I T O, and Dana Vasquez Ebernhardt. EBERHARDT. The inaugural Eyes of Wakanda season will have 4 episodes, and it will debut on August 1st. This article was titled, Eyes of Wakanda Trailer, Marvel Animation Series on Disney and Series Explores Wakandan History, written by Trey Mangum Blavity, July 28, 2025. The next article is from The Griot and is titled, Former Vice President Kamala Harris Finally Makes Her Decision About Her Political Future For Now, written by Garen Keith Gaynor, GERREN GAYNOR, July 30th, 2025. Former U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris made public on Wednesday her long-awaited decision about her political future, announcing that after careful consideration, she will not run for governor of California. The announcement clears a path for Democrats seeking the office and leaves the possibility for Harris to run for U.S. president again in 2028. Over the past 6 months, I have spent time reflecting on this moment in our nation's history and the best way for me to continue fighting for the American people and advancing the values and ideals I hold dear, Harris said in a statement. In recent months, I have given serious thought to asking the people of California for the privilege to serve as their governor. I love the state, its people, and its promise. It is my home, but after deep reflection, I've decided that I will not run for governor in this election. Harris, who lost the 2024 presidential election to President Donald Trump, had previously told advisors that she would consider all options regarding whether to enter the 2026 California gubernatorial race and another White House run. Harris did not definitively say whether or not she would run for president in 2028. However, she shared, "For now, my leadership and public service will not be in elected office." The former California Attorney General said she would instead get back out and listen to the American people and help Democrats across the country amid the party's exasperation over Trump and the Republican Party's dominance in Washington, D.C. Harris said she would share more details in the months ahead about her plans post-vice presidency. Reese Colbert, REECIE, a Democrat strategist who was an outsized voice supporting Harris's 2020 and 2024 presidential elections, told The Griot she's not surprised by the former vice president's decision. California governor is not a consolation prize from the White House, and obviously her sights were set higher, she explained. Though polling indicated Harris was an overwhelming favorite to take the California governorship, Colbert noticed, "I just don't think that is something that you jump into because it's a layup." In her statement, Harris suggested that she may take a different path from elected office to be an effective voice in the political arena. As we look ahead, we must be willing to pursue change through new methods and fresh thinking, committed to our same values and principles, but not bound by the same playbook, said Harris. Colbert said Harris's statement left her curious as to what she envisions being outside of the electoral politics and what she views as her role. There's a thirst for real leadership, for specifics on how to fight Trump for specific actions. And so I think if she has ideas about that, then I think that her presence will be welcomed, she told The Griot. People want to know what exactly can be done and is being done to fight Trump. So I think there's a certainty, a void to fill. U.S. Representative Sidney Kamlager Dove, KAMLAGER, Democrat, California, a mentor of Harris, praised the former vice president for her impact in inspiring countless women to run for office. Her dedication has played a crucial role in shaping the next generation of leaders in our state, and I'm deeply thankful for her guidance and support, Kamlagar Dove said in a statement to The Grill. Kamala Harris is a giant in California politics. She hasn't just broken barriers. She's shattered glass ceilings time and time again. If Harris were to run for president again, she would already have an advantage as the most recent Democratic nominee and the most name ID among the crop of Democrats expected to enter the race. Congresswoman Kamlagar Dove said as the country embarks on a fight for democracy, everyone, including Harris, has an important role to play. She added, although Kamala Harris is not running for governor, I am confident that she will remain a courageous leader during this critical time. I am proud to stand alongside her in this fight. Colbert said, a strength for Harris's candidacy is that she has already received 75 million votes in the 2024 election and has two general elections under her belt. However, with names like Maryland Governor Wes Moore, Kentucky Governor Andy Beshear, and Congressman Ro Khanna of California being names frequently mentioned for prospective 2028 presidential runs, Colbert notes that an expected wide field of candidates could be challenging for Harris. She added, it's not going to be a coronation in 2028. I think it's going to be another slugfest, like how it was in 2019 and 2020. This article was titled, Former Vice President Kamala Harris Finally Makes Decision About Her Political Future For Now, written by Garen Keith Gaynor, The Grio, July 30th, 2025. That's all the time we have for the African American Hour. My name is Rosemary Onkwe. Thanks for joining me.